Hi, everybody. We have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and our guest today has just directed a feature film that opens in theaters right now.
Real theaters.
Real movie theaters. Go out and see it.
Like where your butts go.
Right. Called Biosphere. And it's far from her debut. She has been working in film on a pretty serious basis for quite a while. And
so you look about 12.
And her name is Mel.
Eslin, you got it. I was, see, it's because I made fun, because I joked about how to pronounce
exactly.
It. That you, yeah.
A simple name.
Mel Eslin.
You just caused me to bump.
Mel Eslin. It's on me if I speak it.
Okay.
Now, I do have a theory. Were you and Mark Duplass watching Biodome?
No. When we knew we were going to make a film called Biosphere, well, originally we were like, oh, this would be funny to call it Biodome 2, but T-O-O.
Right.
And then we went away for a weekend to work on the outline, and we watched Biodome as like a joke, and we loved it, watching it again after so many years, but yeah, did not put any of that into the movie.
No, of course, no. I love that movie. I love Biodome.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody has to, and I guess
it's me. I love it. But I'll tell you, part of it is... I think are all fascinated. It's that thing of like, if you could go to your own funeral, you know, the idea of what if everybody is stuck for whatever reason in a space, what happens and how do we react and how do we live? And with this film, you've got Mark Duplass, the Duplass brothers are just talented to a point that is occasionally offensive. And then also
and prolific
so
too.
But so incredibly nice. They're nice guys.
They're
genuinely
all right.
Genuinely nice guy. I know, right? we got to interview Mark, and it was a highlight of our time doing this because we're such big fans.
And I just read their book, which I like very, very much, which I recommend to everybody.
Yeah.
Especially people who are interested in becoming filmmakers.
Yeah, filmmaking.
Or getting some really useful tips, not generalizations, not cliches, but really useful things to learn and emulate.
Yeah, but they're all about making.
I want to start by saying, because you are now, what is your executive title?
I'm the president of Duplass.
President of Duplass Productions, which keeps you busy just keeping an eye on all of that, I'm sure. But you are one of the executive producers of a show that my wife and I have fallen in love with called Somebody Somewhere on HBO.
Oh, yes.
And we were thrilled to see that there's going to be a season 3.
Yes.
Bridget Everett is so talented. And I love seeing her have a vehicle where you can really just watch her do everything she does. You know, I mean, everybody in it is great, but it's obviously her.
She's so special.
How did that show come about? I mean, I can't imagine pitching that show. And for those who haven't seen it, and it's not a hugely popular show, doesn't get talked about
enough.
It doesn't get talked about enough.
It's popular, but people need to hear about it.
But it takes place in the Midwest, in Kansas, to be specific. And it's about, a handful of society's outliers, oddballs, who sort of try to muddle through life day to day, helping each other, and in some cases, hindering each other, but never meaning to. And it's a film that's very forgiving and tolerant. It sounds like medicine. It's just a lovely, lovely show.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that was HBO loving Bridget. I mean, like, we want to do something with her. Ah. And I think the original idea was Mark going, what if Bridget is who Bridget is now, but never left the Midwest? And, or, you know, what does that look like taking Bridget now, keeping her in the Midwest? And, you know, between Hannah, Paul, the creators and our showrunners, and myself and so, and Bridget, we were all from the Midwest. We all felt like outliers in the Midwest. So it really spoke to us, and also wanting to do something where nobody's a stereotype, you know, the outliers so often in those Midwest stories are stereotypes, or even down to like the local folks, you know, and not having exaggerated, accents. And, so really try to stay away from that and ground everything in kind of more modern and realistic takes.
It worked.
You also worked a lot with Lynn Shelton, who such a special we had an experience that I don't think we'll ever forget. And it's that we got to interview her with Mark, on
Mark Maron.
Yeah. Mark Maron on stage at South by Southwest, when they were their film. What was it called?
The Sword of Truth.
Sword of Trust.
Sword of Trust.
And sitting there with them was just a gift, and being with her in general, a gift. But that's such a, you've worked with some of the very best and continue to do so.
I'm very lucky in that regard.
But I mean, you have to be, this is what we always say, you have to be good at what you do. It does help if you've got some skills. And being a producer, it's occasionally, it's sort of this nebulous title that people don't necessarily understand what it means. And we always try to explain that what it means is that you have to do everything.
Exactly.
You're the mom of a production, or you're the parent of a production.
Yeah. And first in, last out. Yeah. Or you're never out.
Never.
Or your children forever.
How did you begin doing that?
So from a very young age, I mean, like 7 years old, I think, I was like, I want to make movies, I want to write and direct. And was heading down that path, and really was taking the stance of, I want to do every role. So by the time I get there, I know how to communicate, and I know what everybody's doing. And somewhere along the way, doing everything meant suddenly I was producing, you know, somebody saw me and was like, what you're doing by now is producing. Mm-hmm. And then I call Mark Duplass the detour that my life took, which was him being like, I want to make movies with you. I want to make movies with you forever. I love this partnership. You know, will you produce for me? And then at some point it was, can you run my company? And I was like, I guess for a little bit. And then flash forward, and it's like 7-10 years later and something. And I was like, I got a little off track there. I love it. And I, now it's a part of who I am, and I'll always produce even when I direct. And, and that's how I met so many people. And that's how I met Lynn, was, you know, I was her producer real quick. Even though there was this age difference, we met, we really connected. We both loved karaokeing, and I was immediately a collaborator and her producer. And even when I couldn't be a part of it, you know, she'd be like, come and do this pickup shoot with me for Laggies. And so I always found a way to be involved. Mm-hmm.
It's so exciting when you have those moments. And obviously part of what makes what the Duplass brothers do, and you being in charge, is that you work with all kinds of people in all different arenas. Room 104 is bonkers. And part of it is that you have the opportunity, and we know this now with television being where it's at, you can get the best of the best, especially because for a show like that, you only need them for this much time. Oh, and so somebody who otherwise could not commit to 6 months or a year, whatever it might be, could commit to a month, you know, and
or 3 days.
Get a producer, you figure it out.
Give us an example of somebody you got for 3 days that you really were happy to get.
Oh, I mean, everybody. Those episodes were 3 days. I mean, Mahershala Ali, I mean, the people that came to that, Michael Shannon, Kobe Smulders, I got to direct her in one of my episodes. Dave Bautista. I mean, we're talking like 1, 2, 3 days max per each person. We really figured out a formula. We had that set. We would just, you know, bring people in, get them out as quick as we could, and just and also created these like really inventive stories so we could say like, here's something you might never have done and we're not looking for a lot. You want to come play with us for a couple of days.
Well, and that's what I think. This is where reputation comes in. And anybody who would look at your resume, and certainly anybody who, if you're a movie lover and you don't love the Duplass brothers, I don't know what to say to you. as I say, just because they're also part of what the company as a whole does is that they promote people who are not A-list famous, like, and I'm using quotey marks, that it's not just, oh, this person gets $10 billion every time they do a movie. It's just people that they want to lift up. They're doing the thing you're supposed to do, which is that when you're when you're indie who makes good, you take the people and you do the same thing.
Right.
But for that to actually happen, and I have friends who've worked with you over the years who say the same thing. It's, you know, if you really love this, then you want to help other people who love it like you love it.
Yeah, it's lonely when you like get to the each peak and you're there by yourself. Like, you want to bring people with you. Yeah. And that's where Mark and I first bonded, because I was kind of on this track record of working with a lot of actors who were like, I want to take my first directorial debut. And I think that's where I kind of got to be like the stand-in director, because I'd be the one at monitor and they were in the scenes. And there was something about like giving people that first opportunity, giving them a safe space, that I really bonded with Mark on.
What did you learn directing this feature, Biosphere, which is a two character piece?
Yeah.
Two characters played by Mark Duplass and Sterling K. Brown. What did you learn that you didn't know? Or what experience did you have that you hadn't anticipated?
I mean, it's what I had this amazing like 10-15 year film school I got to go to, where I got to watch everybody else go through it, you know, trials, the tribulations, the mistakes, the number of times we have fixed something in post or rewritten it, or, you know, snuck in some ADR that really nails it. I'd seen all that, so I kind of knew. And what I did, which I've never done before, is I actually was watching dailies and getting ahead on the cutting as I went, because I know I don't want to be in post and having to fix these things. I want to have the resources now. So I was actually able to do a pickup and a reshoot while shooting within 15 days, which is a little bonkers, because I had filled myself with all the people I trusted. Most of them I'd worked with for 10 plus years, and was able to move and trust myself. That was the thing, is I'd watched so many first time directors not trust themselves. And I knew I had to keep going, that I couldn't second guess myself. And that was the beauty of Mark and I have worked together so closely for so long. Sterling would say to us, like, you guys are like talking, but you're not saying any words. Like, we would just like communicate on another level. And it was cool too, because I went in going, oh, is Mark going to let me, you know, take the reins? He's such a force. Sure. And it was like, I think halfway through the first day, he's like, I'm just going to sit back. Like, he's like, you got this. It was this beautiful kind of like passing the baton.
Yeah.
Well, so he wore his acting hat. And
he did. I know. Which he does not do a lot, because it's so hard for him to not be writing and directing within a scene while he's acting.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's part of knowing each other and, you know, knowing how you operate. I will say something I very much appreciate is that this is a movie that is not cut. And it's because it doesn't need to be. And in part, that's because you have two really brilliant actors. And Sterling K. Brown, like, he's one of those, you watch him paint a wall, it's fine. Like, he's just so stupid good. But, you know, when you trust your writing and you trust your actors, you can just let them talk. You can let them have their scene, and you don't have to be moving. And I think that you talking about watching so many others, I think that you've definitely picked up some of the best stuff, because doing
that. Thanks.
But it's true, doing that and knowing that the audience doesn't need you to do a pointless close up on their pores, or, you know, a shot to here, a shot to there. No, this is a story, and they're telling us, just let them.
Well, you know? And you lose the process of an actor when you cut, and there's so much that's done when they're shifting between emotions that I just think we cut away too often, or we push it, or we don't allow them to get us there on their own.
Well, and you've worked with so many incredible people who've got great faces, and their faces, you can just, I mean, going back to Bridget Everett for a minute, like, just sit with her.
Yeah.
Just sit with her, but, you know, really just let her be her.
Yes.
And sit. And I think that takes a great deal of confidence and knowing what you're trying to do. Because I don't think, to me at least, this film doesn't feel like you're a first time director by a long shot, and you're not in terms, you know, you've done this, but I think you accomplished what you wanted to.
Thank you. I am and I'm not. It's all that. I mean, I definitely had very much more of a leg up than I think a lot of people do their first time around.
But it's also choosing to take in everything you've learned and not go, now it's my turn. I shall rewrite the book. You know?
Yes. Yep.
What was it like to take your film to the Toronto Film Festival last year?
It was a dream come true. I'd been there as a producer a few times and had never played the Princess of Wales Theater. I'm like, that's where I saw like Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. I was like, that's where all the fancy films go. And, you know, Toronto was amazing because when they asked me to play, I was very protective of the film because I was like, I want an authentic theatrical experience with this film. I think it's better knowing nothing. I want the conversation about the film to happen after you've seen the film, not before.
Right.
And they were game. They were like, let's do a surprise screening. You know, we knew about it for like a month, but we didn't announce it 3 days before. And they were like, and we're going to put in the Princess of Wales, a 2000 seater. And I was like, you guys are crazy. We're not filling that in 3 days. And we did. And I like had an out of body experience. It was just like, I remember this moment where like a line I'd written got this massive laugh. And I was like, what is this? This is the craziest feeling. I still can't explain it, but it gives me chills and it made me so happy.
That's congratulations. That's amazing.
That must be incredible.
That is. There are few things in life where you go, okay, this is a memory I get to keep forever.
Yeah. No. And I was like, this is it. I'm good. Like,
yeah, right.
If we don't sell, like, I genuinely was like, this is all I needed. I'm good now.
You're right. Goodbye. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Now, how long has it been? I was thinking about this, looking at your CV. how long has it been since anybody has uttered the word mumblecore?
Oh my God. Thank God. Not a while.
Yeah.
Not a long time. I remember that was like for a moment, we all thought that was cool. And then very quickly, we're like, is this a positive thing? I remember Lynn and I think Mark, a bunch of them did this like spread. I want to say it was like for the New Yorker. It was like years and years and years ago.
Yeah,
and it was like the king and queens of mumblecore or whatever. And I remember all of us being like, oh, this is probably a good thing, you know, but this is embarrassing.
Well, because Hump Day was in 2009.
Yeah.
That's your first official credit. And so it wasn't too long before that they first.
Well, I remember it. We were at Sundance.
Okay, yeah.
We were at Sundance and everybody was using that term. And I was sort of.
That year?
For listeners.
No, like leading in.
Okay.
It's probably from 2007 or so. They started saying mumblecore and I went, what now?
And that was referring to super low budget indie films. That seemed to come from Austin, Texas.
Yeah, well, generally. and it fit, as you say, at the time. It didn't bother me initially because I thought, all right, people like to give things sort of a category. That's fine.
Yeah.
Then you realize, you go, oh, are you, is that an int? Like, I don't know anymore.
We liked the title and then suddenly we all went, wait, mumble. mumbling.
No, it's they say if you're an indie person and you've done it for a long time and you've learned to do things on truly a shoestring budget, it is thrilling to get to a place where that's not the case. But I think it's important to still have that mentality that there's still not a great deal of waste, comparatively speaking. You know, and as I say, the Floss Brothers, the whole company, what you do, lifting up other people is just, to me, the most precious and important thing that could be. Because that's what they need. That's what everybody needs. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to feel supported and to have, you know, all you need is silly. But when you see Duplass Brothers product, whatever it is, you go, okay.
Do you know how they got their start? Like how they were in the reject bin at Sundance. They're short. This is John. And then Trevor Groff just happened to walk by and be like, what is this? Yeah. I'm like, like what we all give to each other is just invaluable.
Well, I do think that obviously if you were brought up around people who help, then you want to help. At least that's the hope. And it's a good feeling when you then see them take over and do well, and become professional in what they do. I just love, as soon as I see Duplass, this is how my husband and I discovered Creep. You know, we're looking for stuff and we go, I mean, if it's we'll give it a go.
Yeah.
And I love those movies. Yeah. I love them.
It's like the Good Housekeeping seal of approval.
Yeah, right.
Well, it is for me. If I'm looking at emails, which I am all the time,
all day,
about screenings and screeners and links and all this stuff, and there isn't a big movie star attached or an established director attached, how am I going to choose where I'm going to give my time?
Yeah.
My time
and
is
when
my
there's
most
so
precious
many,
resource.
It's hard sometimes, and you're looking through going, okay, do I have time for this? I don't know. What's it about? Does it interest me? And so it's true when you get certain people involved, and that's part of, again, as you know, having someone be an EP on something. Mm-hmm. Many times it's just by giving the name, even if they're not that involved, they know that going into a place and saying, hey, this is so-and-so, they'll go, oh, all right, well then, yeah, come on
in. They wouldn't lend their name.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a matter of lending their name, they wouldn't do that
unless
they really cared.
And it mattered.
Yeah.
And the one thing I can say about us Duplass is, because I'm such a person who is like, never wants anybody to feel abandoned. So people will be like, can we just put your name on it? And then I'm like, but I'll help too. What do you need? I'll watch all the rough cuts for you. Because I like, there's something about putting your name on that just doesn't sit well with me unless you really supported it.
Yeah,
I'm with you there. Yeah,
absolutely. What's your favorite part right now? What is your favorite of all the things that you get to do?
In general?
Yeah.
God, that's tough. I love it all. I'm such a bad person at picking favorites of anything in life. I love.
Okay.
I mean, writing is the thing that brings me the most joy, for sure. I love that. But there's also like, there's this excitement I get when I'm talking to somebody and they're telling me an idea they have. And it's just as like this, like fireworks that happen inside me. And I see it happening in Mark too, which is, I think we're both very similar in that way, where we just get so excited because we're going to help and we can see things and we can expand upon it. And that is such a lovely feeling too.
And now our beloved Vidiots is open.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm so
thrilling.
Happy.
Explain for the people who don't live here.
We got to go the other day when they had sort of like the family opening night. And it was not that many people, which was lovely. So we got to talk to Maggie McKay, who is sort of the queen of Vidiots. Vidiots existed.
Started life as a video rental store.
And I first heard about it. I first heard about it when MTV did a special with Elijah Wood. And it was like following him around for a day. And he said, this is my favorite store in the world. It's called Vidiots. And he walked into it and walked around. And I went, well, if Elijah Wood likes it, then I'd probably like it. That's okay. And from there, always knew the name. And then it became a foundation.
It closed as a video store.
Yeah.
And Megan Ellison financed the storage of their thousands and thousands of tapes, which was very nice and very generous of her. And then Maggie McKay came along and said, we're going to do something. We're not going to open a video store again, just to open a video store again, but we want to do something meaningful. And what they've done is they've taken over an old church.
It was a theater first. It was a movie theater, and then it became a church. And now it's back to its glory.
Now it's back to a really
movie theater,
really attractive, comfortable movie theater, seating a little under 300, I think. And attached to it is the world's grooviest video store.
That's right. And
we got our premiere there.
Yeah, we did.
Premiere. It was, we were the first premiere there, and it's amazing because they have the red carpet amongst the video store aisles. And
I love it.
It's just magical.
It's so important and so special, and it's a spot that we all need. And it's, you know, if you're a movie nerd, there's a handful of places in Los Angeles, especially, that we all cherish, you know, and that we support because we know it's worth supporting. And Vidiot's opening up finally, and they were trying to, I mean, before the pandemic, they were
it's been
there.
Years.
They were almost there, and then our world imploded. And so to get this thing open is a feat, and everybody, our beloved Barbara Twist, everybody
and now
involved.
it's a repertory theater, full-time repertory theater, and in what is known as the Eagle Rock
Eagle Rock area, where hipsters get married. What was it, when I was there, they used to say Los Feliz is where you live when you're a single hipster, and then you move to Eagle Rock with your family. That's the next step. It's a wonderful theater.
I went to go see Return of the Living Dead there a couple nights ago. On July 3rd at 5:30 p.m. They like started exact same time that the movie starts, and it was so, like, the joy in that room was palpable. Yeah, it was amazing. And they still need support, so people should help and donate and get your name on a VHS tape on the founder wall. It's the coolest thing.
It's so good. It's so good and so thought through. And and I love that you had your premiere. I remember I saw the email for that, and because our life is emails. I can't, not for you, right? You don't have to live on your phone 24/7. You're a producer. But that just thrilled me because it's so perfect. And we should say that the Duplass brothers have donated both their time, money, everything. They have really, really, really worked to help get this thing open. And I would just, anybody who lives here or if you're visiting, support. It's wonderful. And it's giving a home to a lot of filmmakers, but also film lovers.
Yeah.
All true.
Yeah.
So Mel, congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bravo.
People can see it in theaters on a real screen.
Yeah. 60 theaters then counting right now.
That's wild. That's why
indie film. Oh my God. That's so wild. I can't.
In the year 2023, given the conditions that prevail, that's a big congratulations.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a really big deal.
Man. Yeah, it feels special.
And again, bravo, the work you do and the people that you help and giving back, which is so important and vital. You know, you're doing it right.
And here's to season three of Somebody Somewhere.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Once the strike is, you know, once that's over, we'll be back.
After a fair and just settlement of the WGA strike.
Exactly.
We support writers. Pay the writers.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Thank you for your time,
Thanks
Mel.
Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great to see you both.
Take care.
Well, I'm glad we got to meet her,
even
if it was over Zoom.
Yep. Sometimes, you know, at this point, we take what we can get, right? If Zoom is what we've got, then we're happy to talk to talented people via Zoom.
And if you haven't heard our conversation with Mark Duplass, which we did several years ago, you can Google it very easily.
That was so cool.
That's exactly what it was. It was
so
really cool. And their book is
excellent.
Is so
thoughtful.
Thoughtful. That's the word.
Thoughtful. They really put effort into it in a way that a lot of people don't even understand. And as you say, it is a book with action. You can learn from it and not
pragmatic.
Just sort of, yeah.
Pragmatic.
Yeah.
They said when they got to Austin, a bustling, you know, creative community, they went to the cheapest part of town and rented a house as cheaply as they could. And then I think they rented or borrowed an Avid editing system so that they could rent it out.
Mm.
So they would have some income.
Mm-hmm.
So here they are starting out, and they've already figured that much out.
Mm-hmm.
Low overhead.
Yeah.
And a source of revenue. That's just, you know, that's just practical thinking.
That's just thinking.
Yep.
Man.
And they built on that foundation.
And she's the perfect president. Mel's the
yes,
perfect
seems
president
that way.
For that.
Seems that way.
It suits.
All right.
Man, well, you can check out the movie and also the different TV shows she's worked on. Some really exceptional stuff. And yeah, that's this week's episode. So if you'd like to keep up with us, I am at Jesse Malton. You are at Leonard Malton on Instagram and Twitter. I just had a breakdown in my brain. On Instagram and Twitter. You are also on Facebook. You can also go to leonardmalton.com for movie reviews, book roundups, and all kinds of good stuff. We're also on YouTube, Malton on Movies. And of course, the Maltreon Patreon.
The Patreon, where if you like what we do and you'd like to help us keep doing it, you can make a contribution as small as
$3. That's right.
And be rewarded for it in turn.
In turn. And we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate those who are our patrons. And we'll see you later.
Take care, folks.